Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
Steve, a cashless society, is this where we're headed to? Listen,
a little bit concerning.
Hey, we've got to pay attention. Yeah. I mean, secret meetings. This is reported by Bloomberg News that over 100 executives gathered in NASDAQ headquarters in Times Square. I've been there, not at the headquarters, but, you know, out in the street there, right, above the building. But, man, that check this out. So 100 of them, they all get together, and in this meeting, as is being reported by Bloomberg, and why this is important, because we're talking about, man, are we getting closer to the mark of the beast? The Bible talks about in Revelation 13. I mean, here we are, the beast, it's a beast economy, it's an economic system, and we're going to be sharing, listen, you can't buy or sell without it. And they're talking about converting, because you think right now that what you're doing when you're spending electronically with your debit, we think that's a pure digital dollar, but it really isn't, because there is a lag in time with this new technology. In fact, this is what the article says. While cash in bank accounts moves electronically all the time today, there's a distinction between that system and what it means to say money is digital. Electronic payments are really just messages that cash needs to be moved from one account to another. And this reconciliation is what adds time to the payment process. So the banks they're like a middleman. And what happens is that although when you're making transactions or you're moving money from one account, it may show up there on your computer screen. It's not actually sometimes there as fast. There's a lag in time. Some reports are that it can save some of the banking institutions like $20 billion. But what happens is that this money now, instead of a ledger being moved and then the money following or the transaction being made and then it being completed, days later, this is going to be absolutely instantaneously.
Wow.
And they're using this technology called blockchain, software, which is being used right now for the Bitcoin, thing that they got going on. Another currency that's not regulated basically removes the banking system. The banking system is the third party involved that helps making this transaction. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the banks are realizing we need to maybe get in this game or we're going to be sidelined potentially. Who knows? But we are rapidly moving to a place where every single thing is going to be electronically governed. I mean, we're talking about the Internet of Things. We're going to be talking today. We're going to show you a chip that people are putting in their fingers, in their hands to answer their telephones, to unlock their doors, to spend money. And you don't even need a surgeon. The local tattoo piercing artists, they're the ones doing it. I mean, it's not regulated. Where are we going with all of this? Not to mention I was watching something on the robotic zone. They're making these artificial intelligent robots, and we've shared some of this with you on VFN TV, to look so natural and so real that now there are concerns that if they continue on this development of technology, this could psychologically scar children because they're so real. They don't know if they're interacting. They wouldn't know if they're interacting with the real person or with a robot. I mean, some of this technology is showing facial expressions that are amazing. They're programming their faces to be surprised, to be angry, to be confused. And where are we going? And so we got to get a pulse. We got to find out what's going on. But it's this blockchain technology. It's this new software, and they released it. And this is the reports are. In fact, we'll have it for you. But they actually, demonstrated this for these executives. And so you got to wonder, what's being planned? I want you to see what this block technology is all about and what they're looking to bring into fruition really soon. Watch this.
Modern technology allows people to communicate directly. Voice and video calls, emails, pictures, and instant messages travel directly from A to B, maintaining trust between individuals no matter how far apart they are. When it comes to money, people have to trust a third party to be able to complete a transaction. Blockchain technology is challenging the status quo in a radical way. By using math and cryptography, blockchain provides an open, decentralized database of any transaction involving value, money, goods, property, work, or even votes, creating a record whose authenticity can be verified by the entire community. The future global economy will move towards one of distributed property and trust, where anyone with access to the internet can get involved in blockchain-based transactions, and third-party trust organizations may no longer be necessary. The uses of blockchain technology are endless. Some expect that in less than 10 years, it will be used to collect taxes. It will make it easier for immigrants to send money back to countries where access to financial institutions is limited. Financial fraud will be significantly reduced, as every transaction will be recorded on a public and distributed ledger, which will be accessible by anyone who has an internet connection. Think of it as wills and contracts that execute themselves, or dated proof of existence for ideas, much like a patent. Blockchain will become a global, decentralized source of trust, but not everyone is ready to embrace it. A huge proportion of trust services, from banking to notaries, will face challenges on price, volume, and in some cases, their very survival. Public authorities could find it more and more difficult to enforce traditional financial regulations due to the new possibilities offered by the Bitcoin network to bypass traditional financial intermediaries. Unimagined new networks will evolve to meet society's needs more cheaply and potentially more securely. Will governments, financial and legal institutions embrace blockchain? What will happen to the ones who don't?
The world is rapidly advancing. So this blockchain technology is basically a digital ledger in the cloud where everyone sees its transactions happening, I mean, instantaneously. And so Mark West is chief technology officer for Fiserv. He says, we created a digital dollar to show the group at NASDAQ that an instant debit and credit on the blockchain can work instantaneously. So as soon as they hit, you know, made the transaction across all these platforms, it was immediately done. And so, you know, that opens everything up for hackers. I mean, it just opens up a world of unknown possibilities. But also, again, it's like a few people controlling the world. You know, it's like whoever controls the world will follow the money. You know, whoever controls the money is wanting to control everything. And so these are things to think about, to pray about, to be alert about, and to understand that, listen, you know, we don't have to be alarmed. We're operating under a different economic system. I mean, if you are honoring the Lord with your tithes and offerings, I mean, this is kingdom finances. You want, God has his own economy, but you can see that the systems of this world, they're trying to do everything that they can, you know, for this beast economy to emerge. I want you to see what's happening in China, because they're incorporating with all this technology like social media, Facebook, and all these websites that allow you to interact with people all over the world. What's happening in China now is they're combining social networking with basically government allegiance. It's a monitoring system. So everyone's putting up all their information online, not knowing that all this information is shared, it's exposed. Look at Sesame Credit and see what's happening. I mean, this is already being done in China. Watch this.
Okay, so one of you recently brought this to our attention, and when we first started looking into it, we couldn't believe it. Even now, looking at this, I keep thinking that there's gotta be something about this that I just don't understand. Like, I must be reading this wrong. It's just so clearly something out of dystopian science fiction, and yet, here it is in our world, and people are actually embracing it. Apparently, China has gamified being an obedient citizen. Going under the innocuous name of Sesame Credit, China has created a score for how good a citizen you are. And that's one of the scariest things I've heard in quite a while. It's jointly run by Tencent. Yes, that Tencent, the one that owns Riot Games and has a significant share in Epic and Activision Blizzard, and also the ascendant Chinese competitor to Amazon, Alibaba, hence the name Sesame. So the owners of China's largest social networks have partnered with the government to create something akin to the U.S. credit score. But instead of measuring how regularly you pay your bills, it measures how obediently you follow the party line. They dredge data from your social network, so if you post pictures of Tiananmen Square or share a link about the recent stock market collapse, your Sesame credit score goes down. Share a link from the state-sponsored news agency about how good the economy's doing, and your score goes up. But Alibaba and Tencent are also the largest online retailers in China, so Sesame Credit is also able to pull data from your purchases. If you're making purchases the state deems valuable, like work shoes or local agricultural products, your score goes up. If you import anime from Japan, though, down the score goes. And this score has real-world consequences. Like many games, Sesame Credit has tiers and levels, and having a high score gives you special benefits, like making it easier to get the paperwork you need to travel, or making it easier to get a loan. Now, currently, there are no consequences for having a low score, but there's been talk about implementing penalties once the system becomes mandatory in 2020. Penalties like slower internet speeds for low-scoring citizens, or even restricting the jobs that a low-scoring person's allowed to hold. But there's one more layer to Sesame Credit, and here's where this goes from being repulsive to downright insidious. Because this is all part of a social network, it also scans your friends. So you will lose points for having friends with low obedience scores. And it tells you this. At any point, anybody can check anyone else's score. And when you check your own score, Sesame Credit provides a handy map of your friends to show you who's dragging your score down. Have you ever had that thing where you play a game with somebody who wasn't doing very well, and you've tried to change their behavior to make them do better? Or maybe after a while, you just sort of stopped playing with the people who were holding you back? That's at the heart of how this system works. And it's also what makes this one of the most terrifying tools of authoritarian oppression I've ever read about. Because, like, mass censorship, jail time, assassinations, those are all big, messy implements for keeping a population in line. That messiness and severity foster resentment, eventually rebellion. They're expensive, they're unwieldy. In the end, those tools are impossible to maintain. But social pressure? Ostracization? Those things are free. They happen on their own. And as a government tool, they don't have nearly the same potential for going embarrassingly, disastrously wrong. With a system like this in place, a government doesn't even have to tell neighbor to spy on neighbor, to rat each other out. Because that's all built into a seemingly innocuous game system. The government need not step in. Re-education will be handled for them by friends, classmates, and relatives who want to maintain a high score. And if that doesn't work, then potentially dangerous ideas still end up quarantined by the social isolation this game system causes. Express or help to spread too many radical ideas, and people will stop associating with you. And not because some jackbooted thug showed up at the door with threats, but simply because associating with somebody with those ideas will lose them all the privileges they've worked so hard to obtain. It recontextualizes obedience to an authoritarian regime. In the past, you obeyed such powers because you were afraid. Fear kept you motivated. But fear is negative. It fosters resentment. The world we're stepping into instead uses positive reinforcement to promote being subservient to the will of the regime. It's Big Brother's kinder, gentler hand. And the things that make this scary is that we've seen the efficacy of this only too well in games. You may not actually know this, but when World of Warcraft was in its early stages of development, it had an unrested penalty mechanic that started limiting experience gains for players who had played too much. And players hated it. They resented it, and they complained about it every day. So, after brainstorming on this for a while, Blizzard had the idea to simply change how the mechanic was presented. Without changing any of the existing numbers or systems, they started referring to the unrested experience penalty state as normal and made it the default. And they started calling the original normal experience gain state as rested. That's all they changed, and everybody loved it. People would log on every day just to get that bonus. Positive reinforcement works wonders. But unlike World of Warcraft, which built a system just to get people to embrace meaningless grinding, Sesame Credit has built a system to get people to enjoy falling into line. Now, the system's not mandatory yet. It's opt-in right now. But it's going to be mandatory in 2020, and there's a terrible brilliance to phasing that in. The early adopters are going to be people excited about this system, people who are already patriotic and are eager for anything that'll help display that patriotism to the world. And as early adopters, they're going to talk it up. They're going to give it an air of being positive and fun. Then it'll be foisted on the society as a whole. More than that, though, the early adopters are going to compete. Already, you can see hundreds of thousands of tweets displaying people's high scores or showing off the new milestones they've hit, giving hard numbers to their patriotism and giving them bragging rights for being the most patriotic, most right-thinking person they know. And that's going to set the tone for how Sesame Credit is intended to be used, as a competition to see who can agree with the government the most. We've talked about propaganda games on this channel before, but for all the time we've spent examining and deconstructing terrible games that espouse hate, and for all the studies on propaganda games James has done, this is the use of game systems that frightens me the most. Because to most people, Sesame Credit will seem benign, perhaps even fun. It's a conversation starter, something to share with your friends. But it's making heavy use of all the psychological motivators that we game makers deploy in scoring systems and ladders and levels, systems that we build to shape play habits and to keep people coming back. Like I said, I'm still kind of in a state of disbelief looking at this. If any of you are watching this from China, please tell me if I'm misunderstanding this thing, because I would love to be wrong about it. If not, well, I hope this episode can do some small amount to help the fight to keep such a system from becoming mandatory. For everyone in the rest of the world, I hope this helps remind us all how important it is to be aware and to be vigilant. All of these gamification techniques we've learned through making games offer incredible opportunities for making this world a better, more engaging place. But every great tool carries with it the potential for misuse. And it's on us, as a community who understands this amazing new medium, to do what we can to stop.
This is all about control.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Schneider writes in his blog, this is what he says. This is why this is so alarming. We're talking about this cashless society and it's now social media type of control is happening in China. Mm-hmm. And it just takes one. I mean, this is a nation that has 1 billion people. And you get 1 million people doing this, it's very easy for the other 6 billion people on the face of the earth to catch on. But this is why he says this is so alarming, because they're seeing major moves toward a cashless system all over the planet. In Sweden, 95% of all retail transactions are already cashless. 95%. And ATM machines are being removed by the hundreds. In Denmark, government officials actually have stated a goal of eradicating cash by 2030. See, cash can't be regulated. You know, you don't know when cash has been exchanged. But if everything is done digitally, they know every single dollar you're spending, where you're spending it, to whom you're spending it, and why are you giving to this church, and how much. They know it all. Think about this. In Norway, the biggest bank in the country has publicly called for the complete elimination of cash. This is what's happening in Europe and in Spain. This is what's happening in these other places right now. Over $2,500 in euro. If you can spend any $2,500, it's banned in Italy and in Spain. You can't spend any more than $2,500. Listen, we're talking about this convergence, Steve, of cashless mm-hmm. society.
Yeah.
We're talking about social media. We're talking about how Europe wants to eradicate
cash. Yeah, removing ATMs by the hundreds.
Think about that.
Yeah.
So if you can't, if they don't know what, you know, the cash is moving all the time, mm-hmm. you know, people don't know what you're buying. That's, you know, you're entitled to whatever privacy. But if you take that away and every single thing that you're purchasing is electronically, there yeah. is electronic digital footprint. And it's like, not everyone needs to know what you're spending your money on, yeah. you know?
And a lot of times too, it's like, we don't see the urgency of this, but just by simply just rewinding a few generations, we can see when they implemented the credit card, that was a huge development. And now to walk around into a store and have cash, that's a surprise. And it's just like, we have to see the connections of how rapidly this is happening. And the very fact that, you know, we were talking about during the break, is just the fact that this is being implemented and you have leaders in the financial industry talking about what do we need to do to make this a reality, that in itself is concerning enough. And I'm even reminded about one of the prophetic words that John Paul Jackson said is, have the ability to show proof that you paid for what you paid for. Have the physical notes from whether it was previous checks, whether it was a bill that you paid your mortgage, be able to prove that you paid for what you paid for.
That's important. That's very important, because he released that in the prophetic a word called the perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there are thoughts that the internet can go completely down
mm-hmm.
and that it will be rebooted. But when it reboots, it's going to be something completely different. And the responsibility is going to be on you to prove that, you've been paying your mortgage.
That's right.
Yes, you paid your power bill. Yeah, you paid that credit card off. But if you can't prove it, And that's the whole thing. You know, everything they ask you, well, do you want an electronic bill? You know, no, send me the paper bill.
Yeah.
You know, hey, send me the paper
bill. Don't do automatic. You know, banks can make mistakes too.
Well, what happens is that if everything is electronic, you don't have any printed material, then you lost your ability to be able to prove that it indeed has been paid. And so you got to be careful about these things.
You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.